Hey everybody, Nate here. Before the show, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about our sponsor, the Snack Nanny. The Snack Nanny is the latest, greatest spill-proof bowl. It's the first snack bowl for kids with a self-closing door. The Snack Nanny allows kids to snack freely without overeating, keeps kids entertained, and prevents them from creating a mess for mom and dad to clean up. Kids and parents love the Snack Nanny. It's easy to use, easy to clean, and includes portion control features that only the Snack Nanny offers. To order, go to www.snacknanny.com. or order from Amazon. Remember, you support our sponsors and they support us. Thanks, and Nihei Debiru. Hey everybody, this is your host, Nate England, and you're listening to Chop Talk, where we talk about everything martial arts related. If you listen to the show on iTunes, please write a review and give us a 5-star rating. Also, don't forget to like the show on Facebook. This week, my good friend Sensei Amanda Kaufman returns to the show. Amanda is a third-degree black belt in Shuriryu Karate and Okinawan Kabuto. She's the owner and head instructor of Advancing Karate in Perrysburg, Ohio. If you haven't listened to last week's show, go back and check it out. Amanda talked about starting martial arts at only 5 years of age, and how she found her current teacher, O-Sensei Robert Bowles, 10th degree black belt and head of the International Shuriryu Association. Amanda hosts an annual summer Shuriryu Standards and Weapons Seminar. This year it will be held on August 8th in Perrysburg, Ohio. The seminar will feature O-Sensei Robert Bowles as the guest instructor. In this week's show, Amanda talks about meeting the real Mr. Miyagi, sparring a sumo wrestler, and she also shares one of her favorite books, The 20 Principles by Gichin Funakoshi. To find out more about Sensei Amanda Kaufman, her upcoming seminar featuring Robert Bowles, and Advancing Karate in Perrysburg, Ohio, visit www.advancingkarate.com. Call 419-509-4277 or email advancingkarate@yahoo.com. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of getting your workout in with teaching all these classes, you know, what are you doing? What's your regular workout schedule? Are you able to get in a good workout with the adults? Are you getting most of it by hopping in the car and going over to Fort Wayne? Do you have these secret sessions where only the sensei is allowed?
Well, I do try and get my workout in during the adult classes. Mm. And sometimes during the kids' classes, too, I try and, you know, participate with some of it as well. But I teach about 6 days a week, and on the seventh day, I try and go train with O-Sensei, and I try and hit the monthly black belt classes, too, in Fort Wayne when I can.
And those are good classes. It's a little bit farther drive from Cincinnati than it is from Toledo, but I've made the drive up for a few of those classes, those black belt classes, and that's a real good workout. And you always get to learn something new, in addition to, you know, getting a physical workout.
Absolutely. Even we focus on, you know, basic cue sort of material during the black belt classes, but he brings it up to a level where we're just as challenged as, you know, as the beginner belts are with that basic material, and that's really worth it to attend.
Mm, very cool. So yeah. Any interesting stories from, wandering the earth, doing the seminars, the tournaments, anything like that?
Yeah, I did. I did attend an interesting event one time. I was on a vacation to Oahu over the summer, I think back when I was 15 or so, and I was staying with a friend, and her family went to a dojo on the island, and I was there at a good time. They happened to have the Aloha State Games, so it was a big statewide competition, and there was just a medley of different types of martial artists and, you know, all over the world, since it was, you know, right there in the middle of the ocean. So I was like, sure, I'll jump into that. And of course, they had my gi and my obi.
Yeah, of course. You always travel with your karate gi just in case of emergencies. You never know. you never know when a challenge match or a seminar is going to break out. You always have to have that with you.
Exactly. So I decided to jump into the Kumite portion of the competition and into the kata portion. I didn't have any weapons with me at that time. But the funny part is they put the girls, the women together into, you know, a division for the Kumite. Mm-hmm. And you don't get to choose your partner. You know, they're assigned right to you and you get who you're given. But I, you know, walked into the ring and there was a sumo girl as my opponent. And, you know, that sort of caught me off guard.
And girl?
She, you know, yeah, a sumo girl. And she was, you know, in the garb and, you know, she was very muscular and very strong. And so, you know, I was sort of like, what do I do?
Yeah.
And I was doing my combinations and, you know, you win or learn, and I learned that round. She definitely won, but it was a fun experience to be against her, and you know, another challenge.
Yeah, that sounds like. Well, was the sparring, was it a point competition, or was it sort of continuous?
It was a point competition. We had three rounds. And, you know, I went in there, I tried my combinations, you know, my back fist, reverse punch, and, you know, to get in there. But she just sort of, like, she just took over and, you know, tackled me a bit. And,
Were throws legal?
What's that?
Were the throws legal in that match?
Yeah, you know, we did. Yeah, we went down to the ground. So I guess so. I wasn't, you know, 100. I didn't do a lot of sparring and competition, so I just went in there sort of for fun and to see what would happen. But I wasn't expecting that at all.
No, I don't think anybody would have expected that. Man, a sumo match.
But it was me. It was also the actual person that Mr. Miyagi was portraying in the Karate Kid movie. He was there and he was one of the judges at the event, so I got to meet him.
And Mr. Miyagi was there?
Yeah, the actual one. That's not his name, though, I believe. I have to look up his name. Fumio Demura, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, absolutely. He wrote a lot of the books. In fact, I'm seeing if I can see them on my bookshelf because they're on there, but it's around the corner. He wrote a lot of books about like Sai Karate Weapon of Self-Defense, Nunchaku Karate Weapon of Self-Defense. So he wrote a lot of those weapons books that I think a lot of people out there are familiar with, and I think some karate books also. And he was the, yeah, he played Mr. Miyagi, and then Pat Morita just did the stunt acting. So that's real. If you ever watch Karate Kid, whenever Mr. Miyagi is going to do some karate, it always gets dark and foggy and the camera gets blurry. That's because it's not Pat Morita. It's not Arnold from Happy Days out there chop-sockying it up. It's Fumio Demura in a gray wig beating up all these 80s thugs.
That's pretty cool.
Did he give you a good score? What do you think of...
Well, I'm not sure if he actually found me computer now. I sort of saw him like in the room and they pointed him out to me. So I don't even remember if he judged me or not, but I was definitely like captured by his presence and just excited that he was in the room.
I had an interesting conversation with somebody once. This was a Goju-ryu person. And I was attending a seminar. I think this was probably the IOGKF Budosai in 2004. I went with Shihan Walker and a few other people from the school. Randy Alley, he was the guest last week on Chop Talk. And John Morrell is another real good black belt from Peoria. And I think that's where it was because that's where that's where I spoke to most of the Goju people. And someone was explaining to me that Mr. Miyagi was the person who had started goad you. And I said, wait, that's not right. I mean, okay, Chojin Miyagi was the guy who started Goju, but it's a different person than Mr. Miyagi on TV. And they're like, no, it's based on the true story. And I'm like, Chojin Miyagi never left Okinawa, or he didn't get, he certainly didn't get to California, didn't teach Daniel-san. It's like, no, that's the guy. It was, I think that person had a tough time separating sort of fiction from reality. They swore up and down that it was Karate Kid was a documentary based on this guy, but I don't think it was.
I don't think it was either.
Yeah.
In fact, I did see there's a movie coming out this year, maybe, called The Real Mr. Miyagi. I just saw like a preview for it, so that might be an interesting movie to catch too.
That would be. Yeah, I definitely would want to check that out. One of the things watching Karate Kid and then Karate Kid 2 especially, because they go to Okinawa, was, I'd be curious to find out who wrote the script and what sort of experience they had in the martial arts. Because it was obviously some guy, a martial arts guy, somebody with knowledge about Okinawa and the history and karate who wrote it. But, when they fly over there in Karate Kid 2, it's almost like they're going back in time. That's what I expected to see when I went over there for the first time. And all of a sudden you have lights and concrete buildings and airports and everything. You don't have this little quaint village second you step off of the plane. But if somebody had been stationed over there in the 50s or 40s or 60s, that probably is closer to what it was. Less developed, still a lot of the villages. I'd be interested, I'd be curious to find out more about how that story came out.
That would be neat to figure out who wrote the script and their experience.
Looking for a way to gain an edge on the competition? Want to give your body some much-needed relief and relaxation? Try Medical Resort ATAC, Okinawa's specialist in sports therapy and wellness care. ATAC offers customizable massage therapy. Try their oxygen chamber for increased metabolism and faster recovery from injuries. Or take their stretching course to improve flexibility. ATAC is used by professional athletes from the Ryukyu Golden Kings, FC Ryukyu, and Ryukyu Corazon. Stop into their center Monday through Saturday at 12830 Oroku in Naha City, Okinawa. Call 098-859-1890 or visit them on the web at www.sanso-atac.com. That's www.sanso-atac.com.
I really enjoyed reading different texts about karate and the different styles and writings from the actual, masters themselves. Really enlightening to read.
Absolutely. Any of them jump out or come to mind?
Well, one book I try to share with some of my students, and it's also a kind of a quick read, so it's great for both the youth and our adult class gets so much out of it too, is the 20 Principles from Gichin Funakoshi.
Oh, okay.
Have you read that text?
I have not. Now, this is I've read Karate Do. Was it Karate Do Kyohan? My Life in Karate Do. But that's more his autobiography. This sounds like something different.
Yes. Yep. I believe he wrote the 20 Principles, but if I recall correctly, I think John Teramoto. I think he was the person who translated it, but what I found, interesting is he was able to spend a lot of time with Funakoshi. So he shares in the book that he has a pretty close and accurate translation of what Funakoshi was trying to get across in his 20 principles.
Wow, very interesting.
Yeah, and each chapter is, just, 3 or 5 pages long, so it's just a very precise summary, I think, of each principle. And then it really leaves it also open to some interpretation, and you can apply the principles to, not only karate, but so many parts of your life, too.
You know, I'm kind of interested. I haven't read this one. I hate to put you on the spot, but do you remember a couple of the principles off the top of your head?
Yeah, I actually have a book nearby. I can
Oh,
grab
grab
it really
it.
quick.
Open it up.
Yeah, let me grab it. But I do. I tend to quote them during class, and the kids, and adults start remembering them too, and they'll say, "This reminds me of Finnegan's principle."
Oh.
Let me open it up. I just found the book. I'm sorry, I'm making a big pause. Is this okay?
Hey, that's all right. That's
Yeah.
what the editing process is for.
Okay. I would read you like the whole introduction. It's so interesting, but I will not take up that much. Well, I have the contents here,
Okay.
and it tells the 20 principles. I can read a few of them for you.
Go for it.
The first one is, do not forget that karate do begins and ends with Ray. And I remember reading that chapter especially, and what stood out to me was what the idea of Ray is. And mostly people think of it as just a bow, but it's he describes it as really the transfer of respect from one person to another, and gaining that and sharing that respect with the person you're bowing to.
Oh, very, very interesting. So it's not just the mechanical thing, the bow with nothing behind it. It's like, yeah, you have to show respect to this person, and they're showing respect to you. Very, very nice. What's number
Yeah.
two?
So a couple others. Number two is, there is no first strike in karate. Three, karate stands on the side of justice.
Now three. Now two is definitely open to interpretation because I remember him and Motobu getting into pretty heated philosophical debates about that, where Motobu was saying karate is first strike only, and Funakoshi, no, there is no first strike. And it depends. What is that first strike? Is that first strike literally where someone throws a punch at your head and you have to block it, or is that first strike where somebody says, "Hey, I'm going to beat your ass," and you have to do something about it? So that is, there's a debatable topic.
Definitely, definitely. And I think he talks a little bit in there about using things only when it's absolutely necessary, and what constitutes necessary, and versus reckless use of your skill or your weapon. So there's 20 of these, and they're really all fascinating to read through. I definitely recommend it if you have an afternoon to read through the principles.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to take a look at that one. Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks. Remember, if you have an upcoming seminar, tournament, or other martial arts event, let us know, and we'd be happy to announce it on the program. And now, back to the show. You know what you said, just hopping back a couple minutes, where you said it was open to interpretation. I think that's an important principle that is actually part of Okinawan culture that is a little bit different than Japanese, American, or even Western, where the Okinawans, and not just in karate, but they emphasize that just that if you do something, it doesn't only have one meaning. So, for example, in karate, we have the bunkai, the example for the kata. Well, you and I being shuriryu guys, we had to learn a basic standard interpretation. Okay, this guy is kicking, you block, you hit him in the chest, and the next guy punches, you block him with a chop, and then he punches again, you block and cover at the same time, and then backfist him in the groin, in wansu, for example.
Right.
But then as you go on, you realize, well, it's not only that. It could be all these other things. It could be he grabs your wrist and that low block is you knocking his hand off. It could be you dodging his punch and you hammer fist him in the groin. It could be a throw. It could be another thing. And to, I think, us Americans and other non-Okinawans, a tendency is to say, well, which one is it? Which one is right? Well, all of them are right. They
Right, they're both right.
right. And the other thing that I've seen, especially in the architecture, for example, is a combination of a practical use of something combined with some sort of symbolic or spiritual interpretation. So, for example, in Okinawa, because they're in the tropics and they get hit by a half a dozen typhoons every year, all the old houses had these about 8 to 10 foot high stone walls all around the entire house, with a opening in the front, which is maybe, 8 feet wide. And then set in on that is another wall. It's called a henpun. So, for practical purposes, when the typhoon comes and all this wind is blowing at 150 miles an hour, I can't do the, what is that? How many is that in kilometers? 200 kilometers an hour. It doesn't blow your house down. But they also had an interpretation where this is supposed to stop evil spirits from entering the house. So, for whatever reason, the Okinawan evil spirits couldn't go in a zigzag. So, if they go through the entrance of the main wall, they hit that secondary wall, that henpun, and that's it. They can't figure out how to get in.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And then it also has the day-to-day application of, hey, somebody can't see into your little courtyard. They can't like look in your back door. And so there's these layers of symbolic and practical application in a number of different things from their culture. And you can really start to see it in karate. I think it's unfortunate that sometimes the Okinawans, not the karate guys, of course, but other ones get a little bit embarrassed that karate is a thing from Okinawa that is worldwide, that everybody knows. Everybody in every country knows what karate is. But sometimes they get a little bit embarrassed and they're like, yes, but we do bingata, which is like this sewing thing. And we do this dance. I'm like, yes. And we make this alcohol. Yes. Nobody knows about that.
I didn't realize that they sort of felt that way, but yeah, it does sound like there are a lot of meanings for, the same thing, and there, you're right how you say, there's not one correct answer to an attack or response to an attack, but there's, I think, as we keep training and training, that those alternate endings sort of develop, and you realize that there really isn't one right way to do things necessarily, that you just have to adapt to the situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also really interesting for me when, you've been running this kata. Okay, I've been running this kata for 20 years now. And then all of a sudden you're running it again, and then you realize, oh yeah, there's this other thing, and this is what it is. I was thinking of it, okay, I'm punching this guy in front here, and I grab this guy's arm and I hit him with an uppercut, and I knock him out, and then I look to my right, and this next guy's rushing in. But then, well, wait a minute. What if that guy that I just knocked out, I need to pick up? Or and so you start to think about, well, it's not just this guy. It's the transitions, it's some of the movements in between. And you start to see some of the stuff as you go on. And that's why I really like the kata of the traditional karate, because you can keep learning things from it. I think with some of the people that get a little bit too jazzed on Bruce Lee a little bit too early. Oh yeah, you don't need any of that stuff. You just punch and kick however you want. No. And that's not even what Bruce Lee was talking about either, I don't think.
Right, you have to go through those basics and those foundations, I think, to get to that moment of enlightenment and, you know, Satori, where you can see some other options, that things aren't so black and white as they were when you may have first started. But I think they need to be black and white at first for you to understand the principles behind them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can have alternates. But that takes patience and time. So,
yeah, absolutely. You can't just do it at the beginning. You got to get the fundamentals down.
Mowari no hito ni sa wo sukete imasen ka? Anata no karada wa kyusoku wo hitsuyou to shite imasen ka? Sports massage, kenkou no specialist, medical resort ATAC wo ichido torai shite mite kudasai. ATAC dewa okyaku sama no karada ni awasaita massage wo okunaimasu. Mata, ATAC no sanso shitsu ni mo torai shite mite kudasai. Taisha koujou, kega no soki kaifuki ni kikimasu. Junansei wo takamero, stretching course ni mo torai shite mite kudasai. ATAC wa pro chimu, Rukyu Golden Kings, FC Rukyu, soshite Rukyu Korazan no senshu mo ryo shite masu. Zehi ichido goraiten kudasai. Open, ketsuyobi kara doyobi made, Okinawa ken, Naha shi, Oroku, 1 no 28 no 30. Denwa bango, 098-859-1890. Homepage mo, cheko shite mite kudasai. www.sanso-atac.com. www.sanso-atac.com. Ego, Portugal go, Spain go, Nihongo ga hanaseru staff ga imasu. Well,
I, you know, since you asked me to be on here, which is a lot of fun, I was, you know, thinking back, and there really are so many fond memories of my training in karate, and I thought of, you know, one other that happened at the South Carolina seminar back when I had first met O-sensei, and there was a guest that year that was an actual samurai from Japan that he came and he visited the symposium. And he did a demonstration, I think, about 10 years ago is where there were some of the recent, at that time, abductions that were happening in the news in Florida and some others that made big headlines. Mm-hmm. And so he was, you know, phenomenal and humble in his own demonstration. But I think mostly he was inspirational because he said that his entire goal in being into the United States is, from hearing these sort of abduction stories, is to challenge all the Udansha and black belts there to go home to your community and host self-defense classes for the youth in your area. Mm. And I think that rings true, you know, still today, that, you know, if you're a black belt and you're training, you know, a big way that you can give back is by working with the kids and the youth and not just your karate classes, but just everyone in the community. Not everyone, you know, has a desire to continue in martial arts, but they might take a week-long camp or, you know, a day-long self-defense class just to be that much safer and have some skills to avoid something or disengage and get away from an attacker.
You know, you're absolutely right because, you know, you don't have to be you know, 10th degree black belt and a, you know, supreme grand master and 4-time world champion to use this stuff. You can't just pick up something in a seminar or in a few classes that you might be able to use to save your life. So that's a great point. I mean.
So we partnered with our county sheriff and every year he's been hosting an annual camp for, you know, kids 5 to 12 years old. So we were fortunate that he backs us, you know, so much and encourages the awareness of our youth in the area. So we're excited about that.
That's huge. And, you know, I'm sure you're going to start, if you haven't already, you're going to start getting those stories back where, hey, my kid was in this situation and what you taught him got him out of this. You know, God forbid that stuff happens. But, you know, mm-hmm. I think that, yeah, you're going to start hearing some really great feedback from that. Could you give your contact information one more time?
Okay. Yep, my contact information, our dojo is Advancing Karate LTD, and our website is advancingkarate.com. You can find our phone number there. The phone number is 419-509-4277, and we're having our 7th annual summer shuri seminar with Osensei Bowles on August 8th in Perrysburg, Ohio.
Well, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. It was great talking to you again.
Yeah, it was great talking to you, too. Thank you for having me on Chop Talk.
Yeah, well, thank you, and looking forward to seeing you hopefully soon, maybe up there at the seminar. That's all for this week's show. Thanks to my good friend, Sensei Amanda Kaufman, for taking the time to visit with me. Nihe de biru and mataya. We'll see you next week. Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks.